Taylor, hey man, it's Brendan from Triple M.
Hey Brendan, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, brother, man. Thank you so much for taking the time out. Appreciate it.
Well, I got plenty of it.
What about that? How are you? I mean, it's such a you know, it's usually a pleasantry. How are you? But seriously, how are you? It's been a weird old year.
Yeah, it's definitely been a weird half a year, at least at this point. I guess we're 6 months into it. I feel guilty saying I'm fine, you know, because you know we're able to kind of ride the storm out right now, you know, and just there's lots of people right now in America who are absolutely fucked.
That's it, man. You know? Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I'm not even just talking about getting sick or any of that kind of thing. I'm talking about just like, how am I going to feed my kids kind of thing, you know, and I'm so fortunate. That's not my problem at all. You know, my problem is just, you know, okay, do I lay out in the sun today or maybe go surf or go mountain bike, you know, or whatever. I mean, you know, it's definitely, you know, it's just relative to my life. I'm fine. I mean, I'm my family and stuff, so I'm good. I mean, am I a little stir crazy? Yeah. Sure.
I think everyone is.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think everyone
is. Everyone is. But, you know, at the same time, you always have to kind of turn on, okay, but look how fortunate I am.
That's it, man. And it is cause for celebration this year for you as well. 25 years of Foo Fighters, a quarter of a century. It is a hell of an achievement. Congratulations.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty hard to believe we're that old, isn't it?
Is it hard to believe? Do you feel like it's just gone in a flash?
Well, you know, life is, well, not the last 6 months, that's for sure, but that's just the slowest 6 months I've spent in a long time. It does, when you actually look at a number like that. I mean, I've been in the band 23 years, so I will be in, I joined in 97, so it is crazy. But it also, I look back at all the old videos and pictures and performances, and I'm like, what the hell happened to our faces?
That's everyone, man. That's not just you.
No, I know. And you can just see the time that way. So it's amazing. I mean, more than anything, I just can't believe we kept it together for that long, you know?
What do you put the band's longevity down to, or is it a number of things?
I mean, I think it's a number of things. I think the fact that, you know, we've kind of cut our teeth live, you know, and really that was always been our sort of, you know, we have great songs and Dave's written some amazing songs, but the fact that we've always worked hard live, meaning tour every time, a lot. I think that has a lot to do with it. I just do. I just think, you know, our management, they always had a kind of world domination, but a world picture in mind. There's a lot of bands in England that don't ever go anywhere other than England, and maybe a tour here, and maybe it's a little tour there, but like every time we put out a record, I mean, we always go to Australia, we always go to New Zealand, we always go to England, sometimes twice. You know, we always do Europe, sometimes twice. Then we do, the hardest part is touring all of America, just because it's so fucking big.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I get it.
And so if there's any places we've missed along the way, it's parts of America, I think. I think it's going out and playing. I think that's our longevity, and the fact that Dave manages to squeeze out a couple good songs every record, you know?
Absolutely. Well, every record. You mentioned Australia, you know, and we are grateful that bands such as yours come down here because, you know, if a few leave it off their stops when touring their albums. You seem to have, like, this great love affair with Australia. Is that fair to say?
Oh, definitely. No, yeah, and Australia was, like, one of the first places where we kind of... the two places that really adopted us, you know, and where we could first play arenas and then, you know, even stadiums later on, a little later down the line, was the UK and Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah. Gotta let them out.
I'm sorry. Yeah, and the Kiwis.
They're off to the second thought, Taylor. It's fine.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. But really, those are the two areas that really first took us, you know, really, it took us a long time in America to really get to a place where we could successfully play arenas, you know, and have them sell out.
What I love about your live shows, it, of course, the passion, the intensity, but also your propensity for cover songs in set lists. There's always a cover, at least one in a Foo Fighters set list. You know, I've seen you play ones from The Faces, Queen, AC/DC. Why are covers so important to a Foo Fighters set list?
I don't know. I mean, I thinking back early on, I remember before I was in the band, they did a cover of a Gary Numan track, Down in the Park.
Mm.
And then we did Have a Cigar by Pink Floyd. I don't know. I think two reasons, really, if pressed to come up with an answer, I would say one is it's just fun. You know, it's just fun. It just takes you back to the, you know, when you were in high school and grade school and, you know, you're playing your favorite, you know, so trying, not always that successfully, but trying to play some of your favorite songs, you know? I mean, you know, I grew up playing in cover bands. We all kind of, I think most of us anyways, played in some version of some cover band as kids, you know, or you do covers. And all of our favorite bands were cover bands at one point. Van Halen was a cover band, you know. Queen used to play a lot of covers early on. I'm sure AC/DC, when they first started out, were playing a lot of covers.
They did.
When they were playing bars, you know, you end up playing covers when you first start out because nobody knows your music, you know. I always tell kids that are starting bands, you know, and they're writing their own songs and everything. I always say, well, you know, if you really want to get some people to come, if you're playing backyard, you know, keg parties or whatever, so just learn a lot of covers too. Write your own songs. But learn covers. And I also think the reason covers are important to us as Foo Fighters is because those covers are our musical DNA. You know, if we play an AC/DC song or a Faces song or a Queen song or a Gary Numan song, that's who we are musically, just balled up into one band, you know?
Yeah.
Without AC/DC for Dave, and me, and without Queen for me, and all that, we wouldn't be here.
Absolutely,
that's
man.
How we learn.
Yeah, and you can see how much you love them when you do play, and it is great for another, you know, to showcase that to another generation. Just circling back to the 25 years, you did mention you've been there for 23 of them. So most of the time, what is interesting to me is you would have heard the debut record, you know, as a fan, much like everyone else. What were your first impressions hearing that debut record?
Well, I loved it. Mm. I couldn't believe it was the drummer of Nirvana, to be honest. I mean, you know, I had just joined Alanis Morissette's live band at that point. And we were just getting in a van to go tour across America and play all the clubs. And her record was starting to go bananas, of course. And, just getting huge. But we were playing all these little clubs, and we were actually... I guarantee you her record came out within weeks of the first Foo Fighters album. I couldn't be for certain, but I would say pretty damn close. And, you know, we had like three or four records in that van that we listened to over and over again. And one of them was the first Foo Fighters record. And all of us, Alanis included, we all just fell in love with it.
Yeah.
Just there's so much joy and catharticism in that album, but there's so much melody. I couldn't believe how melodic it was. I mean, and I remember me and my brother listening to it all the time, and I thought it sounded like, literally, and I've said this before, I thought it sounded like Steve Miller, you know, Black Sabbath or something like that. Like there's something about the way Dave doubled his voice and the way his melodies were that had reminded me of like Steve Miller or something like that, which is odd, you know. I don't know why, but so what did I think? I absolutely fucking adored it, actually.
Was that a no-brainer for you, you know, when you're invited into the band? Because that's a pretty sweet gig, being Alanis Morissette's touring drummer. I guess it was a sort of leap of faith, too, to just, you know, pack that in and join Foo Fighters.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that kind of led to that. I wanted to be in a band.
Yeah.
You know, and Alanis was very gracious and treated us like a band, and we played like a band. And that first band, the version of her touring act that I was in, we could, you know, it was like, it was a band. It really was. And it was a good band. It was a great band. And most of the musicians in that band have gone on to do all sorts of stuff. You know, Chris Chaney plays in Jane's Addiction. Nick Lashley, the guitar player, he does a lot of stuff. He's a big songwriter and a lot of hits and just a lot of session work. And Jesse Tobias, he plays with Morrissey now. Because if you go back and watch that that band, when the first Alanis Morissette band, we were pretty raucous, you know, pretty. I mean, we were like a, you know, in a sort of amalgamation of all of our favorite bands, you know, from The Who to Jane's Addiction, and Chili Peppers and all that, everything in between. But we are pretty raw rock and roll band.
Yeah.
And I kind of got the sense that she wanted to go in a different direction, which she did, actually. And you can hear it, you know, her next record was a lot mellower. And, you know, and I think she was sick of being the angry girl. You know, and I don't think that's the direction she wanted to go. And, of course, I just wanted to go faster and heavier and harder. So, really, the opportunity arose at about the same time I was thinking, well, I might not make the next cut, you know, with Alanis. And I literally heard it on the radio, that Foo Fighters drummer split. And I literally called someone who knew Dave and said, and I got Dave's number and said, hey, I'm your man.
Wow. And well, I mean, 23 years later, you've obviously made the right choice. And your catalogue of songs is just so strong. Every album is very cohesive, but there's always these standout singles as well. Is there a particular record during your tenure that is, you know, stands out above the rest, or a particular song for that matter?
Yeah, a record would definitely be Wasting Light.
Me too. I love Wasting Light.
Yeah, Wasting Light to me is my favorite record from beginning to end that I've made with the band. I did love Nothing Left to Lose. I played half the drums on that record. And I've loved every record. But something about that, it's just such a performance-based record. It's super raw. It's all analog. And I'm a real fan of that.
Like, yeah.
I'm a real fan of, you know, that. I still am. If it was up to me, we'd make Wasting Light over and over again.
Yeah, you know? It's interesting you say that, because it's mine too. Because it's, I guess there were parts that were unexpected for me. You know, you get to track 4 and White Limo starts. I was like, what the fuck is this? It was amazing.
Yeah, you know, all of a sudden, well, you know, I mean, that was the beauty. That's the beauty of that record to me is no matter where we went, which White Limo obviously were like Motorhead. And, you know, Sepultura or something. It's all, and that song was old, actually. We'd been fucking with that song for years at that point. But yeah, there's a lot of songs that take 3 or 4 records to develop into finally making it to the final albums.
Any like notable singles that have taken years to finish?
No.
No, right.
Because, you know, when you are, not really, because, you know, I feel like we did that Saint Cecilia EP, and there's a song on there, I think it's called The Never Ending Sigh, or something like that. But it was originally called 7 Corners. And literally, we have a version of that from the 5 records previously up to that. And when we recorded it for that EP, we all bet Dave our per diems, which is, you know, your little money you get when you, you know, your per diem. We bet Dave our per diem, like, you're never going to finish this song. You never do. You'll never finish the song. It's not going to happen. I just know it. And guess what? He finished the song, and guess what? He made like $10,000 that day from all the per diem. gave our per diems for the month, and he had a big old wad of cash in his pocket because he finished the fucking song. But, you know, maybe he wouldn't have finished the song if we didn't. You know, but
I would say never bet a songwriter that he can't finish a song, Taylor.
Well, he will not put something that he doesn't feel good about. Well, I know that. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've read our worst to best album lists before. I've seen those before. You know, they just these lists off Kerrang or whatever, something like that. And the one that always gets dumped on is One by One. That record always gets dumped on. For some reason, people think that's a big fucking stinker. And I'm like, well, I don't know. It's got All My Life and and times like these on it,
which
probably all my life to me is like, that was the first thing that me and Dave worked on together where I felt like I was really like, we were kind of connecting and sort of, you know, creating together.
Yeah.
Not just playing one of Dave's ideas, you know. It was really, Dave sat down and showed me that, you know, he didn't even have the he had everything else. He had everything else, and he didn't have the intro yet. And I remember writing the middle section together where the beat turns around. And just going, well, this is awesome. And I remember saying to him, we did that in Virginia at his house. And we did it, like, on a couple days off in between tours, you know, because we're young and we didn't have children and families yet. So it's like, oh, let's go work some more while we're not working.
Mm.
And Oscar Wilde said, why go on vacation when work is so much more fun?
Yeah.
But we just, I remember writing that. And I don't know, that album gets a lot of flack. I it's not the best sounding record because it was made at that time when everybody was trying to get their record as loud as they possibly could. Remember that in the early 2000s?
Yeah, just wall of sound, and sort of Phil Spector stuff.
It was just everyone was trying to get their records louder than everyone else because they thought if it was louder, then it would sound better on the radio, which isn't always the freaking case.
No,
I don't
it is
think.
Incorrect.
But All My Life still sounds good on the radio.
I agree, man. And that's actually surprised me because I was going through your discography last night. I was having a look at every record. I was like, that's not a dud. That's not a dud. That's not a dud. Like, they're all, I find, very cohesive pieces of work. And, you know, I think you should be proud of all of them.
I do, too. And I am. Trust me. You know, it's funny because I don't ever look at our work that way because I'm on the inside of it, so I can't really see it that same way that but I can go through all the Queen records, especially the ones in the 70s and the early 80s. I can't really find a dud out of any of those either.
No, and it's funny you should mention Queen, because I know you're a massive fan, and recently our Triple M Club members voted Queen as the greatest rock band of all time, and I thought you'd be very glad to hear that information.
You know, I mean, who's the greatest rock of all? I mean, you know, Stones, Led Zeppelin, probably the Beatles, but, you know, overall, if you really think about it, on a certain level, and really Queen at their prime, which I guess you could say is Live Aid or whatever. I don't know. I mean, who's more entertaining? Who rocked harder? Who had better ballads? Who had better voices? Who could play better as a band? I mean, I don't really know. I think you're got to be honest with your voters, you know, a little bit. They're just kind of the best band of all time.
They are. Well, everyone agrees.
They really are, you know. But the funny thing is, if someone said that to us back in 1985, 86, we'd have been like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
They were not super loved in the mid-80s, especially here in America at all. Like, if you said Queen was your favorite band in 1986, you would be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, well, it's sort of like that. Their music just has aged like a fine wine.
It really has. That's really crazy. You go through their albums, and if I ask Roger Taylor, you know, what do you think of Queen jazz? That's a piece of crap. You know? I love everything on it. And I can't see our records that way, obviously, because it would be weird. I would be a self-centered asshole if I did. But when you're making them, when you are making the record, all of those songs are important. I mean, you know, when we were making One by One, you know, Come Back or whatever, you know, some of the other, you know, lesser known tracks were really important at the time while we were making them.
Who's the zenith of drummers for you? Is it Roger Taylor or, you know, who is in that sort of esteem?
I would say there's like five that really shaped me, if you will.
Yeah.
And I would say that Roger Taylor, obviously, Stuart Copeland, definitely, Alex Van Halen, absolutely, Stephen Perkins from James Addiction was very, 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 very important to me. And just out of pure what I've learned from Dave, you know?
Yeah.
And when I heard Nirvana, I thought the drums were great, but that wasn't like, I didn't listen to it thinking, oh my God, the drums are unbelievable. I just listened to it going, wow, this is amazing music. This is just an amazing band, you know? He didn't play in a way so everyone would pay, like, you know, it wasn't drum clinic-y by any stretch, you know? It was playing for, you know, the music. But what I learned from him, how to record, how to keep better time, how to just all around things that I've learned from him.
Yeah.
He's got to be in that top five.
Is that why your relationship's so strong, do you reckon? Just because you've been on the same wavelength musically for so many years?
I think our relationship is strong because we just you know, and funny, talking about when I played with Alanis, and when we met the Foo Fighters, and me and Dave first had time together, like, first got to know each other a little bit. She actually saw it first. She's like, oh, you're going to be in the Foo Fighters someday. And I'm like, no. But that's it. I mean, we just have a weird, like, brothers from another mother connection. And it's not like we hang out with each other all the time or want to, for that matter. We don't necessarily. We don't spend a lot of time together socially because we spent so much time on the road. But, like, we did something the other day for, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. I happened to be in the studio at 606, and I was going to do a voiceover thing for the XM channel, for Queen's XM channel. They have a channel now, or they did, or whatever.
Yeah.
And Dave was there, and I said, well, let's do it together. It'll be funner and funnier. So we decided to pick the weirdest. Like, they told me to pick my favorite songs. I said, oh, let's pick funnier, the weird Queen songs, like Mustafa, and, you know, the really odd,
obscure.
Yeah, just the fucking weirdest ones we could come up with, you know, and because they had such odd songs. You just couldn't believe that someone would write a song called Bicycle Race. But but we just kept doing that thing, you know, where we just would, like, he would start saying something and I would finish, you know, his sentence. Kind of like an old married couple.
Yeah.
I guess you could say. You know, and it's, which is kind of what we're like in a funny way. It's just family, sort of.
That's it. Well, I've taken up so much of your time, and I cannot be more appreciative, man. Thank you so much for spending some time with me.
Thank you guys so much for always, you know, playing our records. I mean, that's, if it weren't for y'all, we'd be fucked.
Mate, no, we love it down here in Australia, and we can't wait for, you know, the restrictions to be lifted. You guys can come back down here. We can have a big old party. We can get that 10th studio record.
We're going to do it. It's going to happen. We're going to do it, I swear.
Oh, man.
We'll definitely be coming your way as soon as you'll let us in. You still play a lot of Jeff Buckley?
Yeah, Matt, we try to. Definitely Last Goodbye. If I had my way, we'd get Mojo Pin on, but it's a little bit ethereal for a rock station.
I know, but I always, you know, along with the Foo Fighters record and that Alanis band, one of the other records that we listened to nonstop was Jeff Buckley, Grace.
Mm.
And I remember going to Australia with Alanis, staying at the Symbol. And Sydney, and I remember hearing Jeff Buckley's radio there. He never got played on the radio in America at all.
Yeah,
and you guys kind of adopted him before anyone did.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Yeah, really interesting about that, because Last Goodbye and Hallelujah was obviously very big out here, but I think it no one was doing that at that time. You couldn't listen to a record, you hear Dream Brother, and it's massive, and then in the middle of the record you got Corpus Christi Carol, and it's completely different, and it's just as good, you know?
Yeah, so there's just not a bad moment on that record.
Yeah.
And when you go back and you listen to the you know, stuff he was working on before he died, he was definitely searching.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's weird, because I don't know why he got rid of that band, because that band was so good.
They were tight, yeah.
They were so tight. That drummer was so good.
Mm.
And I don't know why he got rid of that band. I think he was just that kind of guy. He was never going to have the same band. He was never going to do the same. He always was going to be trying to, you know, keep moving forward or something.
That's it. Yeah, you're right. The searching thing is right. It's this. It happened with Nick Drake as well. Nick Drake, one of my favorites, and you could just see like it becomes so minimal, and then he got so introspective, and then obviously you know a very sad end. But it was the same sort of thing. They sort of go within themselves, and then you know sort of tragedy happens.
Yeah, still, I fall in love with that record again every couple of years, and then just watch and go on some crazy YouTube, you know, trip. And and then watch his interviews. He was really funny and just a goofball, but like really, I wish I could have met him. Wish I could have seen him play
me
live.
Too.
I never did.
Me too. I mean, I was only 7 when he passed away, and I've obviously found his music later in life. And you know, it's that thing.
I
love this guy. I want to find out everything about him. Oh, he's not with us anymore. That was like heartbreaking for me. You know?
Yeah. Hell yeah. No, I know, dude. It's a bummer.
Yeah.
And that record never was really a hit. It was a sort of like a secret success.
Yeah.
But it's one of the best records of the 90s for sure.
Hey, I agree.
No question.
I agree. You, me, no question. Jeff Buckley, listening party next time you're here.
You got it, brother. You got it.
Hey, thank you so much, man, for your time. I really do appreciate it.
No, I enjoyed it. It's nice talking to you, man. Have a great one.